All right, here we are. We missed a couple weeks. We're back at it. We had so much correspondence. People are like, where are you at? Where are you at? We're like, okay, we're coming.
You guys are like, you were gone a couple weeks?
It's a lot more like that.
I've missed talking to you, bud.
I've missed asking you questions on behalf of the church and talking with you.
And right back at you.
We are in the last chapter. Everyone's favorite chapter. Mm-hmm. I think some people are like, are we continuing the story? Here we are.
Yeah.
So you started off in Revelation this week, Revelation 1, kind of setting the framework for almost how we kind of enter this book, how we look at this book. You kind of alluded to this. You know, there's people that are like, their Bible, you open it, it's just Revelation. You know what I mean? It's like it's the only thing they read. And there's a lot of people who are like, I don't go in there. You know, there's a do not enter sign in front of the book. There's people that are scared by it, people that are obsessed with it, people that avoid it. When you were growing up, what was the category you were in growing up as you approach Revelation?
Well, I mean, I can remember vividly there being people that just loved it, and yet in a way that inspired fear of it. That's how I would put it.
Yeah.
I can remember, you know, I mean, I'll really age myself with you, but, you know, I remember in the 70s, this whole he's coming back and you know, was the deal. And he is coming back, by the way, you know.
But it became like almost like an entertainment fear, like a horror movie.
It was the only thing we talked about, and it's like we just kind of eye to the sky, you know. And I can remember as a kid that, you know, I think there's some people, Aiden, that fear it. And your generation would even feel some of this too. I heard a guy say it this way one time. It's almost like people have taken this book hostage. And so the depictions of it, when I was growing up, I can remember movies. I can't remember all their names, but like Thief in the Night was one, I think. And like guillotines and like these marks on your head and it wouldn't, like, that's all you remembered about it. You're like, I don't know. This is awful. You know? And there was actually nothing wonderful, worshipful, or anything. It was just like, I'm scared. I remember a song that they used to sing. My brother sang it one time as a special and some whatever. And I kid him about it, but it's like, I wish we'd all been ready. You know, ain't no time to change your mind. You know, stuff like that. And I'm like, I can remember just fear, just like these movies would ensue or these images would ensue, the whatever. And I think that's why some people fear it. You know, I've talked to lots of people after this week. Yeah. That would say, you know, my granny or my mom, you know, they just beat me over the head with this book, scared the liver out of me, and that kind of stuff. And so I think it can be easy to use it as a fearful billy club. I think on the other side, there's some people that love it for good reasons. Like,
they
just love it because there's, like, wonderful things in there. I think you can love it for not great reasons.
Sure.
You know, I think, you know, I've been around people who love it because they're like, I don't know, this is my chance to kind of get in the weeds and decode the special, have a special spiritual knowledge of. And and then what happens is it becomes so consumed with it that they're consumed with the book but not the purpose and topic of the book.
Yeah.
And then we said this week, so a lot of people just avoid it.
Yeah.
So I don't know why even try. And you know what I was, and I get that for some, but the thing is, it starts off with this beautiful promise.
Yeah.
And so I actually think, you know, this book starts with the revelation of Jesus Christ, which is, we talked about this week. Revelation is just this unveiling, revealing. And so why would I want to avoid something that God's unveiling?
Yeah.
Even if I don't understand it all at first. So I think I get all the things. Like, I probably have felt all the things at different times in my life, to be honest with you. I mean, how about you? Do you?
Yeah, you hear, it is interesting hearing you talk about that. I didn't grow up in the 70s. But you do that, like, that look out, be ready, in a fearful, it's easy to read because there's things you're like, ooh, that's sobering, you know?
Yeah.
And you could almost, I think sometimes it's, we always talk about a lot, the pendulum swing, you know,
yep.
grace to truth to what do I have to do to what's God do to how we relevant, how, you know, there's always a pendulum swing mm-hmm. and there could be a pendulum swing to the like decoding stuff, the dragons and eyeballs and no, this is that, this is that. And it can cause you to kind of be like, dude, I don't want any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is there is Revelation isn't the only time that talks about the end. You know,
exactly.
Jesus alludes to it in the Gospels, talks about the resurrection. There's Old Testament pictures of it. Paul writes letters to the churches, the Thessalonians. Stuff. So Revelation doesn't have the
corner on the end. Yeah.
You know, and I think sometimes I've said this a lot preaching that like, but we're still looking for something that is like a hopeful ending where things mm-hmm. are made right. And, you know, we still have heaven imprinted in our hearts. So when we do away with the end of God's story, we end up filling it with technology or medicine or politics mm-hmm. or entertainment. So we sub it out with different things. And so I think about that growing mm-hmm. up, maybe you don't think about it as much. And you look at, I can look at my generation, maybe generations younger than me, be like, yeah, but how does this thing end? Because mm-hmm. we can kind of push off the weirdness of it. And mm-hmm. so I think of that, you know.
You know, you probably have heard the phrase, this person is so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good, right?
Right.
And so I was thinking about that pendulum. Mm-hmm. There are, so you can do that. So heavenly minded, I would say this week we refer to that as escapism. Like, that's all I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
And no earthly. I think you can be so not heavenly minded, you're no earthly good.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point of the book. It's like, what if you lived in the present reality in light of this, I think, present and future reality mm-hmm. in the book of Revelation?
Yeah. Because there's, Jesus can make all things new. Everything that the wrong that we see and feel will be made right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And all those things. What would you say to someone who maybe is listening that's like, man, I've avoided Revelation. It gets weird. It does. It gets, and you address that. You know what I mean? It gets a little obscure kind of quick. What would you, what would maybe be just a word you'd say to someone who's like, I haven't really gone there because of all the mm-hmm. pictures, imagery. I had a family member that was like decoding and I just didn't want to do anything with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing I guess I think to myself is like, I mean, some people can read it and be like, I don't know, that's science fiction-y feel kind of, you know, it's like all these symbols and stuff. And I, for one, I'm not a science fiction kind of guy. Like, I had a friend growing up who was into Star Trek. That's way before your time.
Hey, my dad grew up with the VHSs. The side of them made the Enterprise.
Yeah. I mean,
I know more about Star Trek.
He was into Star Trek. And science fiction is just not my thing. It's like, I don't know. I get it. And so he would come to my house, and I don't know what time of day it was, but there was a certain time of day Star Trek's on. He's in there watching Star Trek, and I'm outside playing. And my mom's like, why aren't you with your friend? And I'm like, because I don't like Star Trek. I don't know, you know? Like, I didn't understand it. You get into the middle of it, and you're like, I don't know, there's a whole story going on. I don't get it. And I think sometimes we can feel about Revelation that way. It's like, I don't get it. Mm-hmm. It's not my thing. And there's already this story going on. How do I get in the middle of it? I think what I would say to somebody is this. There is a promise at the beginning of this book.
Yeah.
Bless this person who reads it, hears it, takes it to heart. So that's God, not me, not you and I saying, hey. And so I'm like, okay, I want to take that literally. Like God says there's a promise. I would say to somebody that's avoiding it, I understand why you have, but I would say take God at his word.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I would say is this. Read it. I would say read it with somebody.
Yeah.
Even if part of your dialogue is like, oh, that's crazy. Did you get that? No, I don't understand it. Let's keep going, you know?
Yeah.
I heard a guy put it this way one time, and I wish I could remember who it was, but he used to be a tour guide at the Precious Moments Museum, which I don't know what that's about. That sounds very precious. But he said all these people would come, and his job was, because they would want to see all the details, and what's this, and how was this made? And he said, the thing I said more than anything as a tour guide was, keep moving, let's keep moving, let's keep moving. And he was referring to, sometime Revelation, you want to just like, I wonder, and you get lost in the weeds, and there's read it with somebody, and keep moving the first time. Yeah. And then I would say, as you read it again, read it with somebody. I think there's value in doing things in community. Mm-hmm. And then maybe invite into the communication a trusted resource that somebody can point you to that will get you an overview.
Yeah.
Because sometimes if you can get just certain pegs in place, yeah. you're like, oh.
Yeah.
So if you get, like, I personally believe that there are pegs that can help us with this. Like, maybe, just maybe, Revelation 1:19 is the outline of the book.
Yeah.
You know, when he says this. And so when I read it that way, I'm like, okay, well, what if that is the outline of the book? What helps me see things different? Or I think Vodi Bachman, I referenced him this last week. If I don't read it like a puzzle book that needs decoded, but I read it like a picture book, and he's looking in these windows and he's invited in these places, like, okay, now I'm going to read it different.
Yeah.
So there's certain pegs that you can get in place. So I say read it with somebody, keep moving.
Yeah.
Remember, it's part of a bigger story, and invite another trusted resource in.
Is there any if there was one misconception that someone was approaching the book with that you could like give a little piece of advice on, or correct one misconception someone might be approaching it with? Is there something that you think of in that regard?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's several, but, I think one is, I think a lot of people approach it like a puzzle book to be decoded. And so I got to read this thing and get my glasses just right so I can, oh, I decoded everything. Yeah. When actually you read it, and he says, these are things John saw, write what you saw. It's a picture book, and he's doing his best to describe the pictures that he's seeing.
Yeah.
And I think the symbols are on purpose. I think, I think there are misconceptions, if I could just go historically. Like, there are three or four different ways people interpret this book that I think are wrong, personally. Like, there is a camp of people that say this is describing history that's already happened. Mm-hmm. And so everything's already in the past. Well, that kind of begs the question, when's this? Christ is coming and every eye is going to be whole. Like, that feels kind of like future, that didn't happen, you know? Clear to where there's people that would take everything. It's just allegory. It's just like this spiritualized, moral, kind of allegorical literature. And you know, there's not a literalness to it. And the literalness needs to be read through the lens of it is apocryphal prophetic genre.
Yeah.
So he's using all these symbols. And so I think people can do that. Here's all of that jargon, here's what I would say. When people approach this book and it creates worry, I would say that's a trip to something might be off, because it's about worship.
Yeah.
I think if people read this book and it causes them to simply sit and wait for Jesus to just make this all right, I think there's a trip, that something's wrong, because what the book should do for us is create an urgency to join Jesus in his present mission that he's doing right now.
Yeah.
He says, go make disciples.
Yeah.
I think when people read the book and they don't realize there were real churches he was writing to who were really in real circumstances, and he's addressing things, and then he's writing this book to them. He's trying to anchor, hey, the way to address some of these things, I'm telling you this not as an addendum. It is part of what I want to address.
Yeah.
And those churches then, I think, help us. It becomes relevant to us today.
Yeah.
So all of those things for me, like, there's a lot of people afraid of this. It creates worry. And I'm like, I think when we get it in its right spot, you think about the worship scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, Revelation 4 and 5, I mean, other places as well, are just these worshipful deals. In fact, I heard a guy, I read a guy this week said that the book of Revelation crescendos in its worship.
Hmm.
You know, so it starts off as a twofold doxology, and then you get to a chapter later, and it's a threefold, fourfold, seven. So I think if worship doesn't crescendo, I think we're missing something. Now, that being said, I think we just got to be honest. In the middle of this book, and we're going to cover this, what, in 3 weeks? In the middle of this book is God's righteous, holy judgment. Mm-hmm. There's no way to, so you can try to sugarcoat this thing, but that God is a righteous, just judge. And so I think there's no way around that. In fact, we want him to be that way. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Yeah. We need him to be that way. I personally think that in the middle of that time, which we call the tribulation, there's this incredible evangelistic initiative that's going on. Mm. And that we see the grace of God in the middle of the just and righteous judgment of God. Mm. Which, by the way, is a microcosm of the cross.
Yeah.
His justice and mercy meet at the cross. Mm. And so, you know, those are things I think when you read Revelation, I think people that feel like they have to tell me what every little thing means, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and we talk some about that. Like, I think I'm going to get lost in the weeds. If I get out of this thing and don't see Jesus, I probably missed it.
You said this Sunday, and I'm not going to say exactly what you said it, but that you said, if everybody asks me, you know, every new election or natural disaster or whatever that happens, is this the end? You're like, I don't know if this is the end of the world, but what I do know is that there will be an end to your world. Mm-hmm. And being prepared for the end of the world will help me make sense of, or help me be prepared for the end of my world. Because we all going to die. Mm-hmm. 100% mm-hmm. death rate. You know, like, yeah. It's, no one makes out of this life alive. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
I'm sure I've seen it on a t-shirt in Myrtle Beach or something, but it was deep in the subconscious. How does that show up practically for someone that's like, hey, I'm scared, I'm not prepared for the end? That person's gonna die mm-hmm. at some point. How do you think, what does that look like practically for us? Take that into the practical mode. You're talking to the church. Us being ready for the end will make us ready for our end.
Yeah.
What do you think that looks like?
Yeah. So my mind, when you first asked that question, I might get a little off here, but I'm thinking about this series we're in, the story of God. And the first thing that pops in my mind is that there's nothing new under the sun. The voice of the ancient serpent in Genesis 3 is a voice that continues to say, you surely won't die. And then it's a voice that says, you know, God knows that you'll know right from wrong, good from evil. And so we live in a culture where it becomes easy to live as though we're not going to die and assume that we're the ones who should decide what's right, wrong. And it's interesting. It's,
yeah. Yeah.
There's not a lot different.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think what happens when I live and all I think about is the end of the world. Sometimes I can live like I'm sure that I'll be there at the end of the world. So I got to know how the world ends.
Yeah.
And I'll be alive for that. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that are buried and gone that thought I'll be there when it ends. But what we can say, as you said, with 100% surety is their life ended.
Yeah.
And my life's going to end. And if I'm ready for that, I'm ready for the end of the world, whether I'm here for it or not.
Yeah.
And so what it does when you think that way, I go back to that being heavenly minded, earthly good kind of thing. I think when I live and understand that, I said it this way in a funeral I did not that long ago. I said, it's not till you're ready to die that you now are free to live. Mm. Because it's like I'm ready for the moment, if my Bible is right, the moment that I breathe my last breath, right, it's the end of my life here, but it's a transitionary moment.
Yeah.
And so I've cared for that. The same Satan who sold that lie in the garden, Hebrews 2 says, he said, you surely won't die. And then Hebrews 2 says, the minute we buy that, then there becomes this fear of dying. Hmm. And Hebrews 2 says that's why Jesus came. And that's why he died in a place, so that he could eradicate the fear of dying that the devil has sold.
Yeah.
And so I'm not afraid of dying. And so now I'm free to live with a focus and a priority. And that focus and priority has everything to do with a perspective that is anchored in the realities of eternity. But if I don't do that and I haven't settled the end of my world, then I'm going to fritter away whatever time I have left. I think I've said this before. I used to have a Simon as a kid. I remember it went something like this. Only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. When I was 12, I'm like, wow, that's a long ways away. I'm not 12 anymore.
Yeah.
Now, I did ask my grandson the other day how old I looked. And you know what he said?
What did he say?
He says 79. I'm like, I don't know what I think about that.
To be fair, you probably look pretty similar when you get there. Like you're kind of, you know, frozen in time.
It's amazing how quick 60. I'm 60. It's amazing how quick 60 comes.
Hmm.
My dad, Aiden, was 73 when he died.
Hmm.
I'm 60. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to die at 73, but my dad didn't know when he was my age he had 13 years left.
Yeah. Yeah.
13 years. My father-in-law was, I think, 63 or 64 when he died. My father-in-law had no idea when he was my age in my seat, he had 3 or 4 years left.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? And so I have no idea how long I have. But, you know, it doesn't matter. When you recognize my world's going to end, I'm ready. The Bible says this, that it's appointed unto man wants to die. And after that, the judgment. And so I can either stand before Christ as the one who will judge me or the one who was judged for me.
Yeah.
At the cross.
Yeah.
That's the difference. And so that's what it means to say yes to Jesus. He took all the judgment that I deserve, by the way.
Hmm.
I deserve a bit of it. He took it. And so when that happens, I don't stand cavalierly. I don't say this cocky. I just am ready.
Hmm.
Because there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Now I'm free to live. If I got 13 years, 4 years, or God forbid for you, but 44 years, right? You know, for me to live is Christ, Paul said. To die is gain.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, 13, 3, 30. But for me to live is Christ. And so I'm going to anchor that in the realities of eternity.
Yeah. It's an important conversation. I think we all, wading into Revelation, and again, Revelation is one chapter, one book of a lot of different areas that talk about the end, but the story of God is a full story, and so we're all looking for the end in some different ways. So I think us just kind of sobering up a little bit in different ways to say, mm-hmm. Hey, let's look at this, be challenged by this, find the hope in this, find ourselves in the midst of this story. It's good for us as a church to do. Looking forward to continuing going through this.
It'd be a fun journey together. Yeah, it'd be fun. I love it.